We'll call the meeting to order, and we do have a quorum. And I need somebody to make a motion to approve the minutes of the March 23rd meeting. Representative Holberg moves the minutes. All those in favor of the minutes, approving the minutes of the 23rd meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes approved. We're here today to listen to the budget resolution, and for that we'll turn it over to Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would move then that the Committee of Ways and Means adopt resolution labeled KN-RES07, which is the budget resolution setting three things: sets the total amount of expenditures, sets the total amount for reserve accounts, and provides then targets for each of the major omnibus or bills that will come through the Ways and Means Committee.
All right. Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Chair, with that, if you want to vote right away, that'd be fine. We could have a real short meeting, but I would imagine there may be some questions on it. Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, since that's moved before us, first of all, I want to say that developing the budget resolutions, and particularly in this session, is, I think, extremely difficult. We've attempted throughout the budget resolution process to reflect, hopefully, what has been told to us by community members as we went around the state listening to their concerns. I know for a fact that within those particular meetings we had people that said, don't ever cut my program, and some that said, don't ever raise my tax. But given those, and when we understand that, and we appreciate those particular voices, and we need to listen to those. But I think coming through all the community meetings we had was a theme of realizing how tough the budget problem is in the state of Minnesota, realizing that there's going to be cuts, there's going to be revenue increases, and there's going to be some shifts. And to have that try to reflect as fairly as we possibly can in the budget resolution. I want to thank Representative Holberg, because she and I had the pleasure of meeting, as I called, all of the Republicans, the GOP members of each of the divisions together, and listened to their concerns. I met with all the Democrats on each of the divisions as well and listened to their concerns. Now, each of the concerns, I think, are expressed somewhat in the budget resolution, but more input will be put in as we go into each of the committee meetings with their targets. That means that we're not dictating to each of the committees what is involved in the bill. What we're dictating to them is two things. This is how much money is in your target, and we're going to try our best to also make sure that we control the tail. That's not part of a budget resolution, but it is part of, I think, of what we're attempting to do in the long run to make sure that we address the ongoing problem that exists in the difficulties with the budget forecast. We're going to give the committees lots of flexibility, but make sure when they come back through the Ways and Means process that they have balanced their budget within the targets that were given. In your packet, members, is three or four different scenarios. If you pull those out, and we had them numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4, I think. If you look at number one, the House proposal, the very first column, should be the reflection as well in the budget resolution. I think those numbers are reflected to that. And you will see on there then the general fund cuts. And then you will see that there are some differences in the shifts, particularly in case 12, is reflected in the next to the last column, the revenues in the tax bill of $1.5 billion, and the net spending cut. And the net spending cut then will be handled in another one of the sheets. You will also see in the bottom that there is a budget reserve of $250 million. The cash flow remains at $350 million. There is a small claims and other bills of $12 million. And the $20 million that you see in cancellations is one that is part of the forecast, revenue forecast. That's kind of a standard cancellation throughout the biennium. Number two is the budget resolution as it relates to the total picture. The revenues in forecast were 30.7. The carry forward is 219. That gives us our total, that carry forward from 2008. That gives your total amount. The proposed spending resolution is 30.6, a budget reserve of 250, and it leaves us with a balance in the general fund of $18.9 million on the bottom line. Number three is the use of the stabilization fund, and if you also will look at the long sheet as well, we asked, and Representative Holberg asked, and I think Mr. Marx has been able to accommodate, to put these on the long sheet as well. But the federal stimulation monies are as follows. In K through 12, it would be an additional 275.6. In higher education and workforce, 361.9. And we have to follow on those particular targets the federal guidelines. Within the federal stabilization money, it's a total of $816.5 million. We needed to spend 81% of that in education. We maximized the education amount of money that we could to bring this up, to hold education harmless. And you will see in the targets as well that education, when you include the federal stimulus money, higher education, early childhood education are held harmless. There's no cuts to those. As you look at the federal stimulation money, that goes back in. Now there's a little bit of discrepancy in the health and higher education, and that in our particular structure in the House for the committees, that also includes workforce development. So it may not be exactly for the all education, for higher education. But I'll tell you that higher education is also held at a zero in this particular budget. There's an additional 89.3 that folds that into healthcare, and an additional $38 million of the stimulus money, of the stabilization money, goes into public safety. There's flexibility in that money in that it can be used for just about anything. It can be used for courts. It can be used for public safety in the state. It can be used for all aspects of the public safety, corrections as well. Additionally, there's $21.14 million the federal stabilization money that goes into taxes, for a total of $785.9 million. Now there's $30.6 million of that because the governor unallotted higher education in 2009, and the federal recovery says we can't go below 2006, I believe, if I got the right date, then it had to be backfilled. So 30.6 of that was backfilled in 2009 fiscal year, the current fiscal year. So we are maximizing the nearly $817 million in federal stimulus money. We also have, even though it's not part of a resolution, at least we need to present somewhat of a plan for 12 and 13. And you will see on that particular sheet for that particular plan. And let me give you one other little crinkle that happened last night in the budget resolution and in the plan as well. There was an agreement reached last night with the Green Acres Bill and the Conformity Bill. As you remember, the Conformity Bill, as it passed the House, was balanced to zero because some things were delayed out. The Tax Conference Committee has brought those back in, and the cost, these are in rounded numbers, if I recall right, in fiscal 09 is about 14.7, so I'll round it to 15 million. They pick up money in 10 and 11 of about 10 million. So there's about a $5 million shortfall. That will have to be carried in the tax target. But it does reflect a little bit of difficulty in 09, the carry forward. And since that happened last night, the fiscal staff, Mr. Marks, has said we may have to have an adjustment on that budget resolution, but they want to have some time to understand how that will affect and which fiscal years that we'll have to count that money. It also brings in an additional, I believe, $7 million in 12 and 13, so our target in 12 and 13 actually has a positive of a couple million dollars. Mr. Chair, with that, I think I have explained all the documents, and that's about the extent of my knowledge, so if you want to vote, that'd be fine. But I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Are there questions? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my first question is for Mr. Marks. Can you tell me if there's a net increase or decrease in the spending level, general fund, and stimulus over the 08 or 09 budget level?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, yes, I can, because you asked me earlier. The spending level in 2008 and 2009 shown in the fund balance is about $33.9 billion. The base level spent general fund only spending in this resolution, assuming the net spending changes here will be reductions in spending, and that's an assumption that I'm making here, actually brings the 2010-11 spending level to the same point, $33.9 billion. So before stimulus funding, it would be level spending. Adding in a couple of the stimulus, the big stimulus items, if we assume the $816 million of the stabilization fund is adding additional spending in here, and then just thinking about this, I was going to add $1.8 billion in on the FMAP money, which I believe, or the Medicare money, which I believe should be added in as well. That would bring us to $36.6 billion, or about a 7.7% increase over the over 2008-2009.
Representative Holberg, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Well, and I find that interesting that we're going to still increase spending that much in these deficit times. But and I don't know if this is a question for Representative Solberg, maybe it's for Representative Carlson. Have we as a legislature in recent memory ever done a shift as dramatic as 73-27?
Trying my best to recall, I did not. I was elected in 1982. I think before that, I think it was 70-30, but I don't know that for sure. And maybe Representative Carlson can help me out on that. In 2003, I don't know exactly what that shift was as well. I just don't know. But maybe Representative Carlson.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and maybe Mr. Chairman, Bill Marks might be able to help on this because I've had conversations with him, but I think that 70-30 gets pretty close to what our largest one may have been historically, but I'm not positive.
Thank you. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, members, the lowest it's been is 80-20, and it was that level in 2002 or 2003. And we have not been to 70-30.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, maybe this is for Mr. Marks then as well. This shift, as far as the budget deficit that we're trying to fill, what percentage of that is filled with a shift or one-time money?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, a couple minutes, please.
And it, certainly, if you'd like to go to other questions and he can report back in a little while, that's fine, too, not to delay the committee moving
okay.
on.
We'll do that. Are there other questions? I guess we'll wait then.
But Mr. Chair, maybe I can give some. All of us have been asking, Representative Holbrook and myself have been asking for the governor's proposal after the February forecast to be a comparison as well. And it's been difficult because those numbers are not in the system yet, and I think the staff and Representative Holbrook and myself are equally frustrated by that. It was promised to us last week, and they said, maybe this week, but it's not in the system yet. But just as an example, I have a comparison of the $6.4 billion projection budget in very, very rough terms of the three proposals. And the budget reductions from the governor are $2 billion. Ours is $1.6 billion, the Senate $2.4 billion. One-time monies, both federal and others, from the governor is $2.6 billion, the House $2.6 billion, the Senate $2.6 billion. So all of us are using both the FMAP and the $800 million. The shift from the governor is 1.3, we're about 1.8, and the Senate at the present time is zero. Revenues, the governor is about 1.8, we're at about 1.5, and the Senate's at 2. And the governor balance in 2012-13 is negative 2.6, we're at zero, and the Senate's at zero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Mr. Marks is ready to answer your previous question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, assuming the shortfall at the 4.674 billion, which people have different numbers on the shortfall, but assuming that the shifts are about 1.7 billion, or about 35% of the total.
And Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Representative Holbrook.
Representative Solberg, the 1.8 in revenue, what revenue are you attributing to when you say the governor uses 1.8 in revenue? What are you putting in his revenue category?
Two categories are the federal stimulus money, the FMAP, which is the Medicare, Medicaid, as I understand it, and the 0.8, which is
Stabilization
money. I want to say stimulus, but it's stabilization.
And maybe I misheard, but I thought you said that the House was 1.5 in revenue. And so I'm just wondering, I was assuming your 1.5 in revenue was your tax increases,
yes.
But wouldn't you then count the federal revenue as revenue as well? I'm not understanding why.
Well,
it would be in one category in the governor's budget and a different category in the House budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I'm being consistent in the category. I think the one-time money is revenue for the state in both the governor and ours. It's one time. I shifted it out the one time from the ongoing revenue. The governor's revenue is borrowing $1 billion. And then taking the health care access fund and putting it in there in revenue as well.
Okay. We'll go to Representative Carlson.
Chair, one of the reasons I hesitated a little bit on the shift question, we used to carry a second shift, and I don't know what that percentage would have been if you combined the two, and that was the, and also Mr. Marks and I talked a little bit about that, that was the 85-15 shift, which dealt with the funding of technical colleges, and we carried that for several years in a different bill, but that's when the tech colleges were locally controlled. And I don't know how that would change the percentage, but there were actually at one point two shifts that were carried. So, and so when I use a different percentage, I was had that in the back of my mind. I know that was about $100 million, if I recall, $100-$120 million, but on a much smaller budget. So what that percentage would have been and what the interplay would have been, we'd have to calculate that out. But we paid that one off because it, when they became a state system, then they could no longer carry a shift.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one additional clarification. Historically, when there was a shift implied in the past, there was also more money available because the property tax shift was a larger shift because it was the shared responsibility between the state and the property tax. And I think at one time when that shift was made, there may have been almost $1 billion in property tax shift as well. So as a percentage of the budget may have been more, but it was recognized differently than just all state obligations. When we took over in 2001, 2000, whatever it was, then in Ventura, more funding of education, that property tax shift became a lot less available.
Let me go to Representative Bunn first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just raising my hand in the midst of the earlier answer to Representative Solberg. I think at the end, Representative Solberg did respond that the $1.8 billion revenue money is, just for clarification to make sure I understand correctly, is two sources. It's the tobacco bonding money plus the health care access fund money that's moved over to the general fund. I believe that's the $1.8. I just want to confirm that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Can I confirm that there's no such thing as tobacco bonds? You cannot securitize tobacco. If you put those on the market, they would not be saleable. It's a bond. It's an appropriation bond. It's borrowing money to pay off the borrowed money, the debt on the borrowed money. It's merely an appropriation bond. Tobacco is not even related to it. In fact, if you use that term in it, they become unmarketable.
Thank you, Representative Silver. Representative Mobley, you have another question?
I do, but this I think would be for Chair Lanchesky, and I don't serve on the tax committee, and I have hardly read or seen any news this week, but my understanding is there was a property or a sales tax increase program proposed by the House Democrats that would allow counties to raise sales tax in lieu of whatever. Can you give me some idea as far as what you've estimated as far as revenues that come out of that, and are there offsetting state expenditures that are related to that, or how does that work exactly?
Representative Zinchisky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's difficult to know Representative Solberg because it's completely voluntary. It's not a state program.
Solberg and I get mixed.
Solberg. That's okay. We're used to it. The proposal is sort of modeled after the governor has signed two county local option sales tax increases since he's been in office and a multitude of city ones. And this is sort of taking that model, and it says that it's a local choice. County commissioners can vote to do it or not. And so it's difficult to know how many would do it. So to get it, you know, would there be state savings? It's unclear. Early guesses might be maybe $100 million in the tails. But this would just provide revenue stability and an option for counties who are going to receive, you know, under both the governor's proposal and I think probably the Senate and the House, is significant cuts. And so those county commissioners will just decide. I guess some would probably figure out it's in their best interest and some would not. It would be subject to reverse referendum. So the electorate, unlike the ones that the governors actually signed in the past, where no one had a choice to vote on them, these would allow the voting public to make a decision on whether or not they want their county commissioners to do that.
And, Mr. Chair, just for clarification purposes, there's state spending savings because you would reduce local aids if they imposed a county sales tax, is that correct?
Representative Lunchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Solberg, I think, you know, whether they do it or not, we're cutting Colbert.
Okay.
I think whether they do it or not, the truth is we're cutting county aid. We hope to cut it less than the governor. He's cutting it, you know, very significantly. and then, you know, he has a sticking carrot program where he's saying, if you don't do my consolidation, I'll cut you more. I'll cut you this much, and if you don't consolidate, I'll cut you more. I'd be shocked if the Senate isn't going to have some cuts, and I'd be shocked if we don't have some cuts. So I think counties, and these are just local partners, they're off our state spreadsheet. I can't imagine that the House, Senate, and the governor, well, the governor has already put his cuts out. I would guess the Senate will, and we will too. But the idea would be, it's possible then we wouldn't, we, just like the governor has a plan here to, you know, do you want kind of cuts or super cuts with this consolidation thing? We don't want to cut as deeply as the governor, but this would be able to help us cut even less. But there still would be cuts because it's voluntary and you can't know who's going to do it.
All right.
Representative Holbert?
Well, I guess just in closing, and I didn't know what the number was going to be about the increase spending from the 08-09 to the 10-11, but when I hear a 7.7% increase, I don't know too many businesses or homes that are going to have the opportunity to have that kind of increased spending, and certainly it's probably no secret that many, if all, not all, members of my caucus are not supportive of the tax increases that are contained in this budget, and certainly would have liked to seen maybe a little more constraint in spending. A 7.7 increase is quite a bit, but you know, we're not going to solve all of these issues today, and I actually have a bet with Craig Stone as to how many times we're going to have spending target amendments between now and the end of session. So I'll let you guys know at the end of session which one of us wins the bet, but I'm guessing we're going to see a number of amendments as well, so we'll watch for those.
Mr. Chair, to that point, let me clarify. Within, we know that we do not have a target set yet for TANF and health care access funds as well. And then the other issue that I mentioned before. So that's three, probably. But if I combine them into one, does that count as three or one?
Mr. Chair, I'd prefer we count them as three because I want Mr. Stone to go down.
All right. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, I know you talked about the targets are going to be within the purview of the particular finance divisions, K-12, I'm thinking specifically here now. I just want to make sure I'm interpreting this correctly. It's kind of interesting now to be involved at this level and look at these numbers from this perspective and actually have to think and provide input on these things. But from my interpretation, looking at the K-12 line on sheet number one, we're showing shift, the $1.746 million of shift, and we're actually showing a cut of $1.76 billion in shift, and then $275 million of cut. And then I understand that we're using stabilization funds from the federal government, federal taxpayer dollars of $275 million to fill that. Representative Solberg, those are one-time dollars coming from the federal government of $275.6 million. Any thoughts about how K-12 will handle that, knowing in 2 years that money won't be here?
Well, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, and if you'll, in our projection for 12 and 13, and these are projections, of course, we have K-12 being a zero cut in the future as well, so it'd be flat, not projecting any cuts. There's a little bit of a shift that gets carried over into 12 and 13 of about $40 million into the shift because of the way the difference of the fiscal years between the tax year and our fiscal year. But our plan is not to have any kind of cuts in 12 and 13 in education as well.
Representative Demmer, follow up?
No, it's just up to my clarification to talk to it. Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, I was trying to follow. You mentioned that the governor had $1.8 billion in revenue and the House had $1.5. So does that carry, is the House's budget smaller than the governor's? I'm trying to get this apples to apples.
Well, in the revenue, there's two things you need to count to, as I understand it, from the governor's perspective, is the increase in revenue. He has a borrowing of about $1 billion. I think it's $987 or something, $987 million. But then, of course, there's also interest on that in this biennium. So he also borrowed to pay the interest off on the new borrowing in the biennium. So he's borrowing twice in this coming biennium to help. Both the additional payment that's needed, plus the interest on the new borrowing that he's doing. And then I believe the other thing that he's doing in the revenue is that he's capturing all of healthcare access funds and putting it into the general fund. That's always been a separate fund. And so those two together, my understanding, is about 1.8. Our revenue increases is 1.5, as you can see on the spreadsheet. Now, I suppose you could put in the revenue increase also in the tax of a negative 250, because they have to also make some cuts in the tax expenditures as well. And if you wanted to count that, that'd be fine. And the Senate's at 2, they have revised their numbers as well. But this is approximately those particular numbers. They're not exact, but they're in the ballpark, I think. And as I stated earlier, we don't have the new governor's numbers, but that's approximately what they would be. My understanding is that there is a little bit of an increase for the last month in the health care access fund forecasted, and so that may change that a little bit, but in approximation, that's approximately where the revenues come from the three different bodies.
Okay. Representative McMurray, follow up.
Well, still my original question. So the House's budget is $300 million lower than the governor's budget? Because the numbers you gave were $1.8 million in new revenue the governor's doing, and the House is doing $1.5. Well, I understand you said they're from different things, but I'm assuming when you gave me the numbers, you were doing apples to apples, that he's got $1.8 billion in new revenue and you have 1.5. Are you telling me that actually his revenue is not a tax increase? It's revenue that we already have and it's really not new revenue, and that the House's $1.5 billion is a tax increase?
Representative Goldberg.
Mr. Chairman, the 1.5 is new revenue from the House. I don't care if you call it revenue enhancements or tax increases. That's the terminology you want. I don't care. If you want to substitute the governor's proposal of borrowing $1 billion instead and having my granddaughter pay it off in 20 years, that's something that's up for debate, if you want. Quite frankly, I don't think that has got any legs in either caucus to borrow $1 billion. What I'm saying is that the governor has recognized that that this particular budget needs revenue increases, it needs cuts, and it needs shifts. All three of us are doing it except for one. The Senate's not doing any shifts.
Representative McNamara?
No, I got it now.
All right. Any other questions for anybody? If not, do you have
Mr.
some
Chairman,
closing comments?
I would renew my motion that resolution number KN-RES07 be passed for the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, all those in favor of passing resolution RES07 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, before you adjourn, I really do want to give another big thanks to Representative Holberg. She sat in on lots of... No, Holberg. Well, I can give myself thanks, too, I suppose, if I want. So hopefully I said Holberg, because it's been a pleasure, and it will be a pleasure continuing to work with you. And you've given some good ideas. The Republicans have given good ideas into this. And the Democrats have, and the public has. We had over 6,000 comments and over 3,000 people, or 1,500 people, I think, that have testified on the budget problem. And as we say, one of your GOP colleagues came by yesterday and said, you can't be having fun. None of us are going to have fun. I told one of my colleagues, by the time the session ends, we're all going to be mad at each other, including ourselves. But we have a problem. We want to do it. We're going to try to do it in the best way we can. And we're going to hopefully listen to everyone's ideas. Not everyone's ideas is going to be incorporated, but everyone's ideas are important and should be listened to. And I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair,
if I might, do you have any idea whether we'll need to meet next week with deadline week? Is there any heads up on that?
Yes, I've told the staff to try to find times and dates. We have a couple of bills coming over from the finance committee that we'll have to process to get to the House floor. Some of them are time sensitive.
Thank you. I was just going to ask if there's any announcements before we adjourn, and you probably covered it. So, meeting adjourned.
Thank you.